Healthy Alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a Ph.D. in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. My name is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. What Healthy Alternatives is about is most of us really want to reach optimum levels of health, optimum levels of well-being. We want to feel better, live longer, enjoy life even more. And that's what I like to bring you in these shows, are alternatives that you can use for yourself that are healthy. A little bit later, I'll be introducing to my guest, Doris Gallen, but let me tell you just a little bit about it. She is a baby boomer who has traveled all 7 continents, 50-plus countries, and she's written The Boomer's Guide to Going Abroad to Travel, Live, Give, Learn. She's going to be in the forthcoming book, 65 Things to Do When You Retire, and she's written 10 travel tip booklets, and we're going to be talking to her about travel and what to watch out for and be aware of and how to enjoy it the most. Every week, I like to begin the show by talking about an issue or concern that you should be aware of about because it can have a real impact on you. What I want to talk about is an enlarged prostate and how that can turn into cancer. Men over 70 have almost 50% chance of developing some sort of enlarged prostate. Medical doctors call this benign prostate hyplasia. The word benign is very important because it doesn't mean there is prostate cancer. It means it's an enlarged prostate. Now, there are lots of drugs on the market that you can use to treat this BPH, except some of them can actually create prostate cancer and actually increase your risk of developing a more aggressive cancer. So you need to watch out for drugs. You also need to be aware of what's going on with dietary supplements because they can also create some problems or not be the solutions that you might think. Now, there are 2 kinds of chemical drugs. One is alpha blockers, and what they do is help to improve urine flow, but they don't reduce the size of the prostate gland. The other is called 5-alpha reductase inhibitors. And what these do is they actually shrink the prostate, which is good, but they come with significant risks, and they may also develop a risk of developing prostate cancer from them. There's been lots of disputes about testosterone level in men, whether or not it's good to have. Well, there have been some researches that looked a lot closer at this. One of the key ones is Abraham Morgan Taylor. He's a Harvard-based MD, and he's author of Testosterone for Life. And his research has shown that restoring testosterone levels in aging men does not increase their risk of prostate cancer, and that actually the men with the lower levels of testosterone are the ones who are actually at the greater risk of developing prostate cancer. There has not been one study, according to Dr. Morgan Taylor, that has shown a direct relationship between the level of total testosterone in the man's blood and the likelihood they will develop prostate cancer. So it's not the testosterone, but it's excessive DHT that's in the blood. This is a chemical in the blood that converts testosterone over to this DHT, and that chemical is the 5-alpha reductase. Now, what are some of the options that you have? There's something called saw palmetto, and there have been 100 clinical studies on saw palmetto validating its effectiveness. And it's actually was one of the first prostate drugs on the market way back in the 1870s. It was released by the Eli Lilly Company. Now, the difficulty and the problem you have to be aware of with saw palmetto is the quality of it. Most brands on the market actually use the inactive form of the plant. What you want to be taking is a daily dose of about 320 milligrams of saw palmetto oil, and that's the key word, oil. Now, a lot of saw palmetto nowadays is ground up berries that have very little oil in them, and so you're not going to be getting the right dosage. You want it to say on the label that it's 320 milligrams of oil. Now, the best method for creating this is something called supercritical CO2 extractions. And if you get an organic supercritical extracted saw palmetto oil, it'll be a very dark green color, and that's one of the highest quality brands and types that you can get out there. Only two of every 20 brands will actually meet this level. Other high-level quality ones are done with ultra-high or high-pressed extracted oils and also supercritical oils. You can also look at using pumpkin seeds to help prevent prostate cancer and enlarged prostate. If you are buying a combination product, though, of saw palmetto oil and pumpkin seed oil, you need to make sure that it still has 320 milligrams of the saw palmetto oil in it. Otherwise, you may be winding up with pumpkin seed oil as the predominant factor. You also want to look at having vitamin D3 in your diet, probably by supplements. And some research in 2005 showed men with higher levels of vitamin D in their blood were half as likely to develop the aggressive form of prostate cancer. Another study in 2007 found that men with higher levels of vitamin D in their blood were 7 times less likely to die from prostate cancer than those with lower amounts. The optimum level you want to look at is between 50 and 70 ng's per milligram. Ng is how you measure vitamin D3. And if you're looking to prevent cancer, you want to go up to 70 ng's per milligram. So you need to be careful with prostate cancer, with the drugs, with saw palmetto that does not have the correct item. You want to make sure it's got the oil so you can protect yourself. If you want to know more about me, Dr. Jerry Teplitz, you can click on the globe on this page, or you can go to teplitz.com, teplitz.com, and you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Every month I publish an e-newsletter that has tips that are different from what you're getting on Healthy Alternatives, and if you'd like to learn more about that, you can go to teplitz.com and click on the Home and About button, and you'll be able to sign up there. I also now make Jerry Recommends on the home page of what you're on with webtalkradio.net, and the first one I'm recommending is you take a look at Dr. William Hablitz's work. Every week, I also like to talk to you about a healthy breakthrough, its new discoveries, the latest information about healthy alternatives you can use for yourself, your family, and loved ones. What I want to talk about today is not a new breakthrough. It's one that was discovered back in the 1920s by Dr. Max Gerson. It's called the Gerson therapy. And the American Cancer Society has stated that 1/3 of our cancers are linked to poor diet, physical inactivity, and carrying excessive weight. Now, what the Gerson therapy focuses in on is the notion you actually have the power, taking that statistic, that you can heal yourself. And it's using non-toxic methods. It's not using drugs, but it's using organic foods, juicing, detoxification, and supplements to activate your healing potential. It's a powerful, natural treatment that boosts your body's own immune system to heal cancer, arthritis, heart disease, allergies, and many other degenerative diseases. What happens is they're looking at really 13 fresh organic juices that you need to consume every day. And by juicing, what you're doing is providing your body with a superdose of enzymes, minerals, and nutrients. This is a whole body approach to healing. And so what the Gerson therapy is doing is reactivating your body's ability to heal itself without the damaging side effects. You can go to the Gerson Research Organization, Google that, because they have reports documenting the research behind their therapy. And many of the success stories have been people whose conventional doctors had given up hope for recovery. Now, it's not a miracle cure. Even they say that. No treatment works for everyone every time. But it's one that you really need to investigate if you or a loved one has cancer, because it's really addressing the underlying causes of cancer and is activating the body to heal itself. So take a look at the Gerson therapy, G-E-R-S-O-N, as a way of really creating health for you naturally. Before I bring on my guest, Doris Gallen, I'd like to pause for this message.
Anyone who has migraines knows that they are almost totally debilitating and hard, if not impossible, to treat. Or should we say they were impossible to treat? Dr. Jerry Teplitz's DVD, Instant Headache and Migraine Relief, delivers on its promise with a 5-minute migraine cure and a 90-second headache treatment. Learn this natural way to get rid of your migraine with the 2,000-year-old Japanese technique of shiatsu, a pressure point method that's simple and immediately effective. The Instant Headache and Migraine Relief DVD also features bonus techniques for treating sore throats, stiff necks, and shoulder pain. No pills, no herbs, no waiting, just relief. Jack Canfield, co-author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, learned these techniques from Dr. Teplitz and says, "These techniques are so practical, so powerful, so simple. They've done it for me and my family. They can do it for you too." Click on the DVD cover on the page in front of you for more information. Instant Headache and Migraine Relief comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. There's no reason to wait. Click on it now.
My guest today is Doris Gallen. Doris is a baby boomer who has been to all 7 continents and 50-plus countries. She's actually fulfilled a dream many baby boomers have had, which is to quit the rat race. And she did that at age 46 to pursue her lifelong passion for traveling and writing. Both her and her husband left their corporate jobs, sold their Los Angeles home, and they started a 2-year round-the-world trip that actually took 5 years. They were a little slow. Anyway, in starting to set this whole thing up, she discovered there was little information or travel services really available to assist her. And so she did her own research. And from that, she wrote a book called The Boomer's Guide to Going Abroad to Travel, Live, Give, Learn. She's become a regular speaker at Educational Travel Community at their annual convention. She has been honored to be included with Gloria Steinem, John Nelson, who wrote What Color's Your Parachute, Mark Miller, and many other folks in an upcoming book called 65 Things to Do When You Retire. And she also has a series of 10 travel tips booklets that have been published for advice for travelers. And so, Doris, welcome to Healthy Alternatives.
Thank you very much, Jerry.
So let's start out talking about the notion of traveling outside the United States. Is it your view that people in the States are having fears developing about traveling overseas?
Yes, I found that many Americans are kind of nervous about traveling outside of the U.S. And I mean, some people, it's just kind of a normal fear that they're uncomfortable with things that are very new, like maybe new foods or cities. And there's also the people who really don't like not being in control. So they fear not knowing what's going on around them. So they'd be very uncomfortable being in a place where there's a different language, for instance. But on top of all that, with what we've seen in the last 10 years, is people imagine that there's huge anti-American feelings out there. And so that makes them very nervous for traveling outside of the country. And we found that this last fear is really more in the minds of Americans than in the reality.
So that the shift of animosity out there towards Americans finding is not really that true.
It's not really there. I think we imagine that people look at us because of our involvement with different wars or that we're seen as a huge aggressor. But for the most part, what we found was people were very happy to see us, and they were interested in talking to us, and not necessarily about politics. We'd just talk about anything. And I think as long as we had an open mind and we were willing to talk about almost any subject with an open mind, they were quite happy to speak with us, and they respected our views, and as long as we were respectful towards theirs.
Now, you've actually made it your mission to help people overcome these kinds of fears and can have. How did that?
Well, I think because while we were traveling, and I've always enjoyed traveling, and in this trip where the first 2 years we traveled around the world constantly, and we met so many people, and it really opened up our minds to a whole lot of new ideas, new cultures, and we found it to be a very enriching experience. And we really discovered that it's by having contact with all these different cultures and nationalities that we become more tolerant as individuals. And I think that will also make us more tolerant as a nation as a whole. And it's by seeing how other people do things that almost anything, whether it's in business or how they deal with, let's say, healthcare issues or retirement issues, whatever, that we can learn a lot from these people and bring these solutions home in the U.S. and maybe adopt some of these solutions. And I think we need to work more with people in other countries to find solutions to some of our problems. And the only way to do that is to go out there, see how things are done in other countries, and, you know, learn from them.
So what you're saying is I grew up in New York City, Brooklyn, and so when I grew up there, the egocentric focus was anything west of New York doesn't exist, and so kind of the U.S. Citizens' view is that we need to, what you're saying is we really need to open up that there's lots of views out there that can really help us in terms of the day-to-day stuff we're going through here.
Absolutely, especially now with the economy and all the problems we are having to deal with. And we obviously don't have the answers at home. I mean, dealing with the healthcare issues that we've been battling for such a long time, and now with the looming Social Security crisis. I mean, there's so many issues that other countries are dealing with. Now, the base of the issue may be different, but there could be some potential solutions out there that if we studied them and we were more open to their points of view, we might actually find solutions to adapt to our situation. And I think we might find that things work a lot better when we do incorporate other types of ideas into our own solutions.
That would definitely be a healthy alternative.
I think it would.
Now, when you started traveling in, I believe it's 2006, and
yes.
What was the kind of the world situation, and how were you at the level of comfort you're at now when you first started out as well?
Well, I'd say we were fairly comfortable because we did plan to go around the world, and we knew we'd avoid certain parts of the world. For instance, the Iraq war had already been going on for 3 years, and the Afghanistan war was 5 years old. So in the Middle East is always, you know, has been for most of my lifetime a problem area. So we had already decided we were going to skip that area, make it easy on ourselves. But in the U.S., the economic bubble, the housing bubble was about to burst, and the Great Recession was going to follow soon after. So that gave us a bit of an impetus to actually get going and sell our house before the economic bubble burst and moved on. And while we were traveling, the beginning of our trip, when we were just sort of getting our feet wet, we were very good at keeping our eyes on the news around the world. For instance, the Thai government was overthrown, and by the army. And we thought, well, what does that mean? Does that mean we're not going to go to Thailand? Well, we adopted a wait and see attitude there because we wouldn't be in Thailand for another year. And as it turned out, by the time we got there, it was fine. Peace had been restored and another democratic government had been installed. And another country with a lot of problems is Mexico. The government that kind of spurred this drug war that's been going on for the last 6 years had just been elected. So we hadn't really seen any of the problems yet, but those were to come. And we did encounter them later in our trip.
Yeah, I had a funny experience. I was in Thailand many years ago, and we were taking a tour of the city with the taxi driver as our guide. And several times we go by this area where they're having protests against the government, and it's like there was nobody there. And then we discovered nobody's there because it's so hot during the day, they do their protesting at night.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And so, you know, who would have figured?
Yeah, that's right. So you can visit the city during the daytime. You're perfectly safe. And
yeah,
what I tell people is just to watch out. I mean, you need to be conscious of what's going on in the countries you're visiting because you don't want to be taken by surprise. You don't want to all of a sudden walk into a large demonstration, a big protest, because you don't know there may be police there. You could be kind of rounded up with the crowds. They don't know you from anyone else, and you don't want to land in jail with the group of protesters. So you need to be aware enough to stay away from those situations. But generally, if there's a protest in the capital city, it doesn't affect the rest of the country. So you're still free to visit the rest of the country.
Uh-huh. So actually, the rest of the country may not care what's happening in the capital city either.
Precisely, precisely. Very much like we are at home.
Right. Now, is in terms of the U.S. State Department puts out warnings about areas that are safe and unsafe, have you found those to be helpful and useful?
Well, we read them regularly just to have a sense of what was going on out there, but we found that they're very much kind of a cover your behind attitude of the government, because they'll issue a warning at the least little hint of a problem, and they'll issue the warning for all Americans to avoid this entire country. And that's really not reasonable. Sometimes it was a little problem in a little part of the country, and more often than not, nothing would come of it anyways. I think the government just feels that they must warn us against everything. A more balanced way to look at what's going on is to look at other countries' departments of states or their equivalent and see what they're saying. Because usually if you look, especially British governments, the Canada and Australia, those are very balanced. They're all in English, so we understand them. And you get a better sense, a more balanced sense of what's going on and whether or not there's anything to be concerned about. And of course, reading the media from the country you'll be visiting is really helpful. And even if it's a foreign country with a foreign language, chances are if there's an expat community living there, there's a really good chance that there'll be some English media that you can find online and just keep abreast of the news that way.
So you can actually do all this searching online for the warnings from the other British and Australian and those kinds of folks.
Absolutely. Everything's online now. It makes it so much easier to travel compared to even 10 years ago.
Cool. Now, in your travels, what faux pas you did out there? I want you to think about that for a minute, because we're taking a break now. To remind you, you're listening to Healthy Alternatives with Dr. Jared Teplitz at talkradio.net. And we'll be back with my guest, Doris Gallen, in just a moment.
Improve your golf game today. It's absolutely possible using the DVD Par and Beyond, Secrets to Better Golf, from stress management coach Dr. Jerry Teplitz. Par and Beyond is a revolutionary new concept that yields immediate results. You'll experience the difference the very next time you play. Even the golf pros love this method. Randy Taylor hadn't placed in a tournament for 8 years, but just 1 week after taking this seminar, he came in second. It's not just in your swing, it's in your head. That's why TNI Golf Magazine calls Dr. Teplitz a headmaster. Par and Beyond, Secrets to Better Golf is available on DVD. You can get it by clicking on the Par and Beyond cover on the WebTalkRadio.net screen in front of you. You'll learn new, powerful techniques that will instantly improve your game, whether you're a pro or a duffer.
This is your new secret to success on the course. It's a totally different approach, and it comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. And don't tell your golf buddies. You're about to become a winner.
So my guest today is Doris Gallen. She's a baby boomer. She's been to all seven continents and in 50-plus countries. And she actually quit the rat race at age 46 to pursue this lifelong passion she had for traveling and writing. She started out with her husband on a two-year world trip. It ended up being 5 years. But she found there was not a great deal of information about travel services that are there. And so she actually has now written a book called The Boomer's Guide to Going Abroad to Travel, Live, Give, Learn. And you can learn more about that at her website, www.babyboomerstraveling.com. And so, Doris, before we took our break, I was asking you about your biggest kind of faux pas in your travel. So what did you come up with?
Well, you know, I guess everybody has some faux pas. You can't help but every once in a while make mistakes. I imagine one of mine might be that, and it's something I always advise travelers not to do, but I guess on my bad days I did it as well, is probably every once in a while you tend to compare where you are with what you have back home. And it's not necessarily meant to say that things are better at home. It's just it always sounds like that. So I always caution people to be careful not to say, at home we do it this way. And I guess once in a while I probably did it as much as anyone else. And even though I always tell myself, don't do that because people will think you're putting down their way of doing things, which was not at all what I was trying to do, but I think everybody does it. You know, I was traveling for 5 years, and I think I must have had other little faux pas in those 5 years as well.
I had a good one where I was traveling from Caracas to Brazil, and I had a flight to Colombia. And I turns out in Colombia, I had to get through customs and immigration, and my plane was running late into Colombia. And I get the ticket counter, and I've only got like 15 minutes before the flight. And they said, sorry, you know, it's too late. And I basically start crying and whatnot. And they take me down to the gate, and they said, okay, where's your passport here, your ticket here, where's your visa? And I went, what visa? I had asked the people bring me down there at one point if I needed a visa, and they never got back to me, and I forgot to ask them again, and turns out I had to stay in Colombia for 3 days because the next flight was 3 days later, and I had to get a visa in the interim.
That's horrible.
Yeah, so taking advice that you're giving and the wisdom that you have can be real helpful.
Yeah, that was one thing we always checked, was whether or not we needed a visa. And often you check several sources. In your case, it's you were probably just busy, and like you say, you forgot to check a second time. But we would never take another traveler's word for it, because sometimes it's a different story for different travelers. It may be that someone coming from the U.S. going to, I mean, name any country, you may not need a visa, but someone coming in from Australia might need a visa. So you really need to check online, and all the countries do have that information on the websites.
Were you ever places where they really restricted you, where you could travel within the country, or, you know, like the stories in Russia and China, but when it was really pure communist China, you know, in terms of having people tailing you and stuff like that, and people assigned to you? Did you ever run across that kind of stuff?
When we traveled through China, we were very free to travel for the 6 weeks that we were in the majority of China. I mean, Hong Kong, Shanghai, Beijing, the more populous areas, we were completely free to travel wherever we wanted. But when we traveled to Tibet, the only way we could travel and get a permit to go to Tibet was to go along with the tour, and it was late in the year, it was November already. So we had a private tour of one tour guide, a driver, and my husband and I, that was the whole tour, for a week in Tibet into the Himalayas, and they drove us to the border with Nepal. And during that time, we weren't supposed to be out doing anything without our guide. We ended up spending a couple of days in the capital of Tibet on our own because we needed the time to acclimatize to the altitude. But that was the only time really when we were restricted.
And what would you say the most important safety issues people have to be aware of when they're traveling?
It's usually it's petty crime is usually the worst thing that affects travelers. I'd say petty crime and illness. And most of these are preventable if you know what you're doing. You just need to really watch yourself as far as petty crime. Usually it's pickpockets or people stealing from your backpack or your luggage. There isn't a whole lot of crime in most countries against tourists because so many countries protect their tourists very well. I mean, sometimes to the point of it's actually a little scary what they do to criminals in China, for instance, because the countries are so concerned with protecting tourism that no criminal will attempt anything against a tourist. And that was true in much of Africa as well.
So us tourists rate rather high because of the dollars or whatever currency we're spending, just brings a lot of cash flow into those kinds of countries.
Exactly. Plus you're going back home and you're bringing your impression of the country, and they want you to go back home with a good impression of the country for tourism, but also for business relations. And so, yeah, usually we found that mostly in South America, we were robbed a few times, but not even robbed, it was pickpocketed, where we lost iPods, cameras, little cameras. And, you know, because we were traveling for such a long time and in so many countries, after a while you just go, well, you know, it's just kind of part of the cost of traveling, unfortunately.
Aha. So is there a way of tips you can give listeners that if they are going to be traveling as to how to protect themselves from the pickpockets? Is there a way to do that?
Sure. One is never let your guard down, which, of course, after a while we tended to because we've been traveling so long. But definitely leave your valuables at home. And people say, oh, of course, I'm not going to bring my good watch or my jewelry. But some people still travel with their good jewelry. But even your camera, don't go with a really fancy camera unless you're, you know, much of a hobbyist or you're a photographer. Most people will just go with a cheap camera. And your passport, those should be the only valuables you carry. Computers, anything is very valuable. And it's very easy for them to steal them and to resell them on the street. So you make yourself a potential victim by carrying anything of any value. Tell people to wear their day packs, their little backpacks on their chest if they're just in crowded areas like markets or in bus stations or even walking down the street. I was pickpocketed once. My camera was stolen from me because I had my backpack on my back, which I didn't even feel it get taken out until somebody told me afterwards, and by then the person was gone. So there's all sorts of little things like that. I go over them on both my website and in my books and the tip booklets because there are so many things you can do to protect yourself, especially from pickpockets.
Yeah, having grown up in New York City, the women there learned early on to carry their purses not on their hanging from their shoulder, but hanging in towards the front of their body. So
exactly.
Same kind of thing that they've got more control over it and they can see it all the time.
Right. And if you have a bag, or I would do this with a bag or a camera, with a 1 or 2 inch wide strap, and you wear it across your chest, that way it's less likely to be stolen. And you feel the bag, you feel the weight of the bag. So if anybody's trying to fiddle with it to try to steal something, you'll feel it. And it's much less likely than that you'll have anything stolen from it.
Do you guys wind up getting, food poisoning, dysentery, that kind of stuff on the road? And how do you go about avoiding it?
Well, in the 5 years we were traveling, we never got food poisoning. That's something we're quite proud of because we do like eating off of little street carts. And we did eat in a lot of little hole-in-the-wall restaurants because that's the way you stretch your dollar when you're traveling. What we did was, I think the most important thing to avoid any illness where food and drink is concerned is to avoid the water. Now, most people know this, not to drink the water, because it may not be purified and they might get sick. But what people don't always think of is that ice is made of tap water, and that ice drinks, such as iced coffees or margaritas, contain a lot of ice. So if you're having a soda, you need to make sure they don't put ice in it. And the other things like margaritas and almost any drink with a little umbrella on it has a lot of ice in it. And again, those you shouldn't have any of those because you could get sick. So that's what we did. We avoided all ice, water, and made sure all our food was well cooked. And we did pretty good.
Do you take a lot of medications on the road just in case you ran across problems like that?
Well, what we did is we saw our doctors before leaving the U.S. and made sure we had all our shots, like tetanus and yellow fever, and there's a whole bunch of shots. Your doctor will ask you where you're traveling to. And because we were going to South America, Africa, and Asia, we pretty well covered all the diseases in the world. So our doctors made sure we had all the shots that we needed. And you need to do this quite early because some of these you need booster shots. So you need a second shot after so many weeks or months. So you need to start taking your shots early. So that's the first thing. And second is to get malaria pills. We met quite a few people, and this is a big discussion among people who travel a lot, is whether or not to take the malaria pills, because they do make a lot of people feel queasy and people would rather avoid taking them. But if you don't take malaria pills and you do contract the disease, it's with you for life. And to us, that just wasn't worth it. So when we took the malaria pills, it was only for a short time. It's only along the equator that you need to take it, those countries near the equator. So you take it for maybe a few months at a time, and then you didn't need it for the rest of the year. And then next time you were near the equator, we'd take them again. And it's certainly worth it, because I wouldn't want to live with malaria the rest of my life.
A good alternative.
Yes. Health is always important.
Yeah. So for those of our listeners who'd like to pursue this further, and I assume your Boomer's Guide to Going Abroad to Travel, Live, Give, Learn, anybody could read it and learn from it as well, I assume that?
Yes, it is. It's good information for anyone of any age. I targeted the Boomer group simply because it's my age group, and most of the information out there for travelers is really geared towards the youth market, and I wanted our generation to have its own guide to going abroad, so I went after the Boomer group.
Great. And so to get that book, and she also has a number of booklets on traveling, go to babyboomerstraveling.com. Thanks for being a guest today on Healthy Alternatives, Doris.
Thank you for having me, Jerry.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.